Welcome to The Other Coast, a podcast detailing the Malifaux meta in Los Angeles. And actually, now I realize it's possible the word welcome got cut off because we are trying to record this over a brand new platform because Zencastr is evil, or at least just greedy. And so we're trying this on Riverside, the recording platform for Spotify for podcasters, and we'll see how this goes. So if there are any technical issues with this episode, it will actually not be Colgan's fault. It will be Spotify's fault. So pressure is off for Colgan.
Yeah, I can just blame it on like the $1 billion company. How much is Spotify worth? Are they even public?
I don't know if they are public or not. I know I have a Spotify subscription and I listen to a lot of music. So I enjoy Spotify as a product. I will say the algorithm for me, like, you know, new music suggestions does not tend to really be very effective. But then every once in a while, there will be a week where, you know, like a third or half the suggestions are good. So it's very hit or miss.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, I appreciate it just because it forces, it's a good opportunity to kind of expand your musical knowledge and tastes.
Yeah, I mean, it is apparently very
is this now an advertisement for Spotify?
I mean, it's apparently very exploitative, so, you know, it'll help reduce the, you know, the commercial aspect of it. I constantly read about how performers are, you know, angry that they, you know, their royalty rate is really bad. I'm not a musician. I don't know anything about that. I could very well believe that's true, but like most things in life, Spotify's convenience means that I, as an end user, am going to continue using it. And I may just feel guilty a little bit about it for the artists out there. So, you know, sorry.
Yeah, I know there's like arguments you can make in the other way too, because like considering your listening habits, like think about how many artists or songs you would have just never listened to if it wasn't this convenient or there wasn't that extra exposure.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not a black and white sort of issue, but it's also not the topic of the day. So what we're going to talk about today. So we are talking about NPEs in Malifaux, negative play experiences for people who aren't familiar with the term NPE, although I imagine most people who listen to a gaming podcast are going to be pretty clued in on it. But, you know, Colgan, briefly, what is an NPE, or at least, you know, what is our episode kind of about? What do we want to talk about?
Yeah, so NPE can be kind of broad because it's basically anything that happens in a game that evokes generally negative emotions. I think one of the more common examples are the idea of gotchas, where basically either it's too hard to understand what's going on, or the opponent is intentionally hiding information from you that should otherwise be public in order to like get the upper hand. So it's like, you know, oh, if I move here, can you shoot me or attack me? And your opponent's like, I don't know, like, we'll have to find out. And after you move, you find out that their entire army, because they have like some special fancy rule, they can, you know, just light up every guy you just move forward. In which case, it's just like, well, you could have told me that and I would have acted differently.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, you know, that would be sort of a gotcha, which is one of the categories we have in these NPEs. And, you know, what I think is important to kind of emphasize here is that just like whether or not something is fun, whether or not something is negative is going to be subjective. There are going to be people who find some experiences intensely negative and others who don't mind or even enjoy, you know, that experience or aspects of it or whatever. So we do not believe that we have the right to adjudicate what is an NPE and what isn't. But what we want to do is discuss a little bit some of the things that we frequently see described as NPEs in Malifaux and you know, to a certain extent in gaming in general. Some of the things that maybe we don't really enjoy so much, right, that we would characterize as NPEs. And maybe if we have time, like some ways to address them, or, you know, if there really are any ways to address them. And I want to hit this first one, actually. So gotchas is going to be our first category. And Colin, you brought up a great example, right, where there is an information gap or a communication gap between the two players that results in a situation that, you know, one player would just not have intended. And, you know, the way you described it sounds kind of like an intentional ambush. I think most people would describe that as an NPE, but these can also arrive by accident. In fact, I recall a game that we played, a Malifaux game that we played, where you asked me, something like if I was in range to do something. And I said that I wasn't in range because, as I understood the question, it was like, oh, well, are you in the range of this effect? And you weren't, right? But I was able to make a move and then do it. And you were kind of like, you know, dude, I just asked you if you were in range. I'm like, yeah, you did, and you weren't in range. And, you know, because we have a good rapport, it doesn't feel the same as if you ask someone that you don't know or someone that maybe you don't really like very much. So I would say that some of these situations that we're going to talk about, they are intentional. People wanted to ambush you, or they derive fun from the intentionality of the situation. And many people find those people to be jerks. But there are also going to be many situations where it is a communication mishap. And it's unfortunate when that happens too, because oftentimes there's no way to rewind without one person or another suffering the burden of it. It can be kind of like awkward or uncomfortable or just time consuming if you know, there's no emotional implication, but still just kind of time consuming or clunky to rewind. Colgan, for you, you know, how often do you find yourself in sort of like gotcha situations?
I mean, a lot of the times it'll depend on, you know, my familiarity with the game. So I feel like when I'm playing Malifaux, it's not that often, but it's also, I've kind of become inured to it. Because when I'm playing against new crews, like, I know I can read through everything, and I'll glance through it, but in my mind, I'm just like, I don't want to, like, spend, you know, like, 30 minutes or an hour before the game just reading through everything and understanding all of this stuff, so I just kind of, like, submit myself to the fact that there's just shit that's going to happen in this game that I'm not going to understand. But, you know, I feel like overall, you know, like, of course, when I start a new game, there's going to be things that I just need to learn from experience. And I think as I played more and more games, I just come to accept that. So with that state in mind, I guess like the times where I actually feel like there's a gotcha or my opponent is acting in bad faith is pretty rare.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'd say that the most common instances where I encounter this, and not so much myself personally in Malifaux, because I'm fairly well versed in the rules at this point, but it is like a rules thing that one player understands and the other doesn't. And it's clear to the person who knows the rules what the other person is trying to achieve, but they've done it wrong. And, you know, there's no communication of that fact, right? They simply accept their opponent's mistake and take advantage of it. And, you know, I think that that's kind of despicable. I think a lot of people would describe that as an NPE, especially when it's done intentionally. It does, unfortunately, you know, this is kind of a thing where when you do a lot of demo games, you kind of run into a lot of situations where, unfortunately, the newer player has got themselves into a situation that's not good that, you wish you could have helped them out of earlier if you understood what was going on, but that's not always possible. I have heard this argument that, you know, Malifaux is an open information game, right? It's on you as a participant to understand what is possible and what is not. And so, like, why is, you know, why is NPE due to a gotcha even possible? Do you have a position about that?
God, this is so context dependent. I mean, I think part of it, I mean, you know, it's going to depend on the person, but in some cases, it could just be information overload. In the case of masters, like, I could see Marcus, you know, masters that hand out a lot of upgrades, or like Make Morning 2, or I guess like the old Brewmaster 2, where it's like, okay, you can read and get like a baseline understanding of what they do, but until you've played a few games, or unless you've like read and thought about the combinations within a crew, like there are aspects of it that are not immediately obvious upon first reading or even after playing one or two games. I know when Jim was playing McMorning 2, he was talking about how like it wasn't until it was like fourth or fifth game with him that things started clicking. So, you know, what chance does someone have playing against the crew the first time when it's just like, oh, you know, this guy moves over there, they pick up this upgrade, it recycles and drops the, you know, a course marker over there. And there's like so many things going on that, to a point, like even playing against it, I was like, I know Jim isn't trying to fuck me over, but I just can't fucking keep up with what's going on.
What do you think? So, you know, I kind of feel uncomfortable when my opponent shifts the responsibility onto me. Like if they ask me a question, is there any way your model can do this, right? Or is there any way like this can happen? And I'm going to answer that question as honestly as possible, but I kind of feel uncomfortable being put in a position of like being right there. You know, maybe I didn't realize something that could happen. Because Malvo has a lot of information. You know, if I'm asked, is it possible if this happens? And I answer honestly, you know, I don't think so. And it turns out there is. What is, you know, as someone who wants to be an honorable opponent, what am I supposed to do there? Am I supposed to just eat the mistake and not do it? Am I supposed to do it anyways because I am entitled to and it is up to my opponent? You know, how would you handle situations like that?
Yeah, that's a really tough situation. I think you generally want to make a best effort, but I agree with you. I think if you're going to ask a question to your opponent, it needs to be like pretty clear cut. And it also has to be like a simple thing to answer. You know, like, okay, your guy can like move 5 inches and then they have range 10. Can he move and then shoot my guy from this distance? And you're going to check a measure. And if your opponent says no, and you say, okay, I'm going to move him there, and the next turn they do exactly, you know, they just move and then shoot your guy. And like, that feels to me like a kind of bad faith. Whereas, you know, if you move your guy like to the square, it's like, okay, so no one in your army can shoot him, right? And like, maybe like, do you like, I don't really want to like go through every possible scenario in which I might be able to get a shot. Cause like there's times where it's like, I could get a shot on this guy, but like the chances of it hitting are so low that it's not going to happen. And then, you know, they have an ability. It's like, oh, they're going to like increase his attack by 10 and lower his defense by 10. It's like, okay, well now this makes sense to do.
Right. And I mean, I think that's actually potentially a kind of NPE, right? Like weaponizing incompetence, or, you know, shifting all of the burden onto your opponent, I think can definitely be an NPE, especially if it's done maliciously, right? You know, if you understand who your opponent is, or, you know, kind of how they feel about these things, and you do actively try to shift the burden onto them. Now, again, this is a very rare behavior, but there are people out there who are constantly looking for edges. If that were to happen, I would definitely describe that as an NPE. And I think even without intentionality, at a certain point, I do find it very negative to be asked to assume so much responsibility for my opponent's decisions.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, you do your best to avoid it. I think sometimes it's just going to happen. And it's more about, you know, whether or not this is a pattern with the person you're playing against. Because there's definitely some situations, I guess, like, there's times, you know, when I'm playing against, you know, newer players, and they make actions, and I'm like, okay, I don't, you know, like, what they're doing, I don't think is strategically sound, but it's not necessarily incorrect. And then at those points, like, I don't want to step in and start dictating their play, especially because then sometimes, you know, you advise them in a way which you think is the best, and then like two activations later, you realize because of how they set up other things, like they're completely screwed. And it's like, okay, I told you this was the best action, and that was true at the time, but now the situation has changed in which you just fucked yourself, or, you know, I basically fucked you over and like I've engineered your destruction.
Or you give them the right course of action and a random element makes it fail or something.
Right. So like in general, I will not say anything unless I'm directly asked, because I do not want to like that position to come up, because it's just terrible for everyone involved. It's like, okay, either I just like ignore it and then now I feel kind of like the game stops making sense, because now I just have to perpetually play around this bad advice that I've like seeded into their play. And it just gets too weird. Like if they'll ask me questions, I'll say, you know, I could do this, like it's possible I also do this as well, and like I'll kind of like say like these are plays I could do, but I'm not going to like commit to anything. And I think there's even situations in which that could backfire. So there's definitely like a lot of situations in which, you know, gotchas and stuff could come up without there really being ill intent on either side. And I think that's how it comes up the majority of the time anyways.
So another potential category of gotchas, and I don't really think it's fair to describe these as gotchas, but it often does feel this way. And you touched on this a little bit when you were talking about information overload and what models can do. But I mean, some of these can be not particularly involved and not particularly complicated, and yet still feel like gotchas, right? So like Thune's Trigger. If you are a newer player especially, or you know, someone who's just never seen Euripides, Thune's Trigger to lock up a model in an ice pillar until that ice pillar is destroyed, that is not something that you see a lot in the game. It's not something people are going to really prepare for if they don't know about it already. And if you're playing against a newer player or a more casual player and you're able to lock down, say, their master or somebody really important in that manner, you know, that's like kind of an effect where it wasn't complicated. The opponent could have been aware of it if they took basically any effort to review, not even your whole crew, just your most important models in Thune's case, because, you know, he's a henchman. But still, you know, it's a kind of thing where now your opponent doesn't get to use its best model, and that feels really crummy. Like, do you feel the same sense of obligation for like potential gotchas or potential NPEs that are, you know, that you don't have to go that deep to find? Like, you know, does that make you feel, I wouldn't say better, but just like a little less off the hook about it? Or, you know, for you, is it more just about, okay, this happened and my opponent hates it and this game is kind of not so fun for him anymore, or them? The game's not so fun for them anymore, and so now I feel bad. Where do you sort of sit on that?
Oh, sorry, to make sure I understand. So basically, you're talking about abilities that are easily readable. Like, you don't have to dig too deep. It's just like Thune and Thune alone can like box one of your guys. And do I feel bad about not explaining that beforehand to my opponent?
This is, I guess, sort of creeping into the next category of warping experiences, right? Like effects that can have just this huge impact on the game. Thune's, in this case, is, you know, it's not complicated to read through, right? He does it on his melee attack. It's not that hard to find out where he can go in most cases, right? And so it's not something that your opponent has to big brain to kind of figure out. And yet it can still be really intensely negative. And so I guess, yeah, what I'm asking is the ability to understand the effect clearly, does that, in your mind, kind of push some of this obligation to your opponent to understand it? Or do you still just think, hey, if my opponent is having a terrible time, it's going to make you feel bad about the situation?
Yeah, personally, if my opponent is just having a terrible time, it's going to make me feel bad about the situation. But it kind of, I guess the hard thing is, yeah, it's like, how much personal responsibility should I feel? I think for me, I generally won't, like, because I know some people really like to do like run-throughs of like what their crew or what their army does before the game. And like, I personally don't do that. And I think part of the reason is whenever my opponent does that, I'm just like, I cannot hold this information in my head. Like, I just need to like play through, because like they'll go through everything and then I'll feel obligated to go through my stuff. But then I'm always thinking like, am I actually explaining enough, or am I like going too far? So I think for me, if I notice that, you know, a couple of my opponents, they have a very negative reaction to like a specific ability, even if it's really obvious on the card, then I'll start making an effort in future games to point that out. But like, because like from my personal experience, I don't really care that much, like whether or not it's like something that's easily read or not, as long as it doesn't feel like my opponent is intentionally hiding that, right? So it's like, okay, my opponent has Thune. I don't know what Thune does. He boxes my guy. I'm like, oh, what does that do? And he explains it after it's happened. I'll be like, well, that kind of sucks, but, you know, whatever. So, like, I guess generally when I play, I just keep that same mindset. Does that
answer the question? Yeah, I mean, I guess. There's not... For a lot of these, there's not an easy answer because you end up in a situation where the game is not fun for whatever reason. And even if you think your opponent's rationale is, you know, unjustified, it doesn't matter at that point, right? Like, when you're playing a game with someone who is not having fun, unless you don't like them and you are deriving enjoyment from their misery, it's not a good experience, right? And being like, all you had to do was... you know, like read my, not even all my models, just my most important models, and you would see this, isn't really an answer, is it? So let's talk about some of these warping experiences that exist in Malifaux. And some of them are things we've discussed in other episodes or, you know, aren't going to come as a huge surprise to people. But I still think it is worthwhile talking about these potential effects, because they are, I think, more commonly cited as NPEs, or they can lead to situations that I think a larger percentage of the player base will find negative. And right off the bat, I want to start with Seamus. Seamus himself is a very warping model. And when we say warping, I think what we mean is that the effect has the potential to really change the flow of the game. To have a huge impact on the outcome or on the decision-making process of one or both players. And Seamus is a model that has this effect because his gun, his ability to teleport around the board, his ability to swap his places with the copycat killer. So he has a massive attack and a huge amount of mobility, which makes it very difficult to read through all of the ways that he can potentially get into places. He also, you know, can potentially shoot twice, depending on the situation with his bonus action. And so, you know, Seamus can potentially have a massive impact on the game that, even if you're trying to be helpful to your opponent, is very difficult to actually describe accurately, completely. Colgan, do you personally find Seamus an NPE, and, you know, whether you do, what do you think about his potential to be an NPE to people?
I haven't played against him that much, or if at all. I've played as him like once or twice. I personally, I don't really feel it's like an NPE, but I can definitely see like there's a big potential for it. And I think that that can happen a lot in a lot of games when you're still starting to come to like grips with like what's actually important or what's strong in the game. Like there's a couple of games, like the first time I play them, I feel like, oh, this unit's super overpowered. This is kind of bullshit. And then you're like, go online, go to all the forums, and everyone's like, this unit's trash. I don't know why anyone takes it. And it's like, wait. Like my understanding of everything is incorrect. And I feel like Seamus can definitely feel like a really overpowered master when you're first starting to learn Malifaux, because yeah, he just goes, he appears everywhere, he kills whatever he wants to kill, and then he disappears. And I think there's also, you know, like certain armies or masters where when you're on the receiving end, it feels like it's overpowered bullshit, but when you're on the opposite end and you're playing Shame, it's like, if I miss this shot, like I've basically accomplished nothing this turn. You know, it's like you flip and like they get a red joker and it's like, okay, well now nothing I planned out for the rest of the turn is going to come to fruition. And that can feel really bad as the player, even though when you're playing against Seamus, all you see is them knocking off one of your models every turn with no real counterplay.
Sure. Counterplay is actually a really good a really good topic, and we do want to talk about it definitely, but in another section. But I mean, I would agree that Seamus, I mean, he's warping for a lot of reasons, and one of them definitely is that he can remove counterplay because of just how mobile he is. So the next kind of category we have in warping experiences are grindy games, right? So games against Yedza / Jedza. I don't know how that's actually supposed to be pronounced, but I've heard both ways. You know, Cadmus, sometimes some of the summoners. If you have a crew that's incredibly resilient and you don't have the counter tech against it, so you know, you're fighting against Hoffman and you don't have any anti-armor. A grindy game can be a warping experience because it doesn't kind of follow the traditional flow of a game where, you know, that involves two crews that don't have that degree of durability. Do you find sort of grindy, attritional games to be NPEs?
I personally do not like them, yeah. I think we've discussed this before, but I definitely prefer, like, more aggressive playstyles and, like, a faster pace of the game overall, which is in contrast to you, who likes attritional and grindy stuff. Like, you know, I don't think that anyone plays that style is like necessarily a bad person, or they're like intentionally creating an NPE. And even then, it kind of depends on the degree. But I played against Yedza several times, and I just do not like the game of Malifaux playing against her. How it feels to me, it doesn't even have to do with like power level wise. Like, it's not a matter of her being like strong or weak. I'm not honestly not even sure where she falls in the whole like meta power level of things, but just the fact that it feels like you can never kill anything, and every action you take is responded by having like 6 or 7 minor effects pop off to like add another like 5 or 10 minutes to everything you want to do, just like drains my soul.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you so far in that, although, as you said, I kind of do enjoy attritional / grindy playstyles. I would say that, you know, the how you were mentioning that it's not really connected to balance, and it's not even necessarily connected to, like, when we say NPE, in a way that has a like a negative or accusatory connotation. But in fact, someone can find something to be a negative play experience without any sense of attributing blame. And this could simply, you know, just be a situation where, you know, people don't want to play against these kinds of crews. And the reason it's listed in this episode is that I do think I see these sorts of crews targeted more frequently as a kind of thing people don't want to experience. You know, I would kind of sort of say, like, in card games, right, control. Many people do not like playing against control-type decks, and it doesn't imply that control is illegitimate or that the people who play control are bad, but it's just sort of, I understand what kind of game it's going to be now, and that's not the way I would prefer to play this game or spend the next 2 hours or whatever. So the next one actually sort of, I guess, falls into a similar line, and that's bad matchups. And it can be bad because of balance issues. It can be bad because of tech, or like a rock, paper, scissors dynamic. But we also do have opponent play style, which I think would also include crew play style as an option. Like Colgan, you know, for here again, because we said we don't mean NPE in sort of an accusatory or judgmental nature, necessarily. Sometimes there's just nothing you can do about it. But what do you do when you find yourself in a game where, you know, at the start, because of the matchup, it's not going to be fun for you? Like, do you just kind of grin and bear it? Do you try to find like some sort of side objective to amuse yourself? Do you take it as a mental challenge, like a willpower type challenge, and you just try to double down? What is your kind of approach to this?
Yeah, it's going to depend a little bit on how overwhelming I think, or how oppressive I think the matchup is. Generally, I'll just try to find a little side objective to, like, all right, I want to accomplish this, or I want to try and do this to at least like eke out something or have a goal in the game. But if it's like overwhelming power to the point where it doesn't really feel like anything I do matters, then I might just like nope out of the game or just like concede. I'm thinking in general, like, I think there was like there, you know, some like online card games or, you know, like Hearthstone or games like that. Sometimes there's a matchup, and especially in like collectible card games where it's like, okay, you see these cards and the balance of the game is so bad that it's like, I'm not going to win this. Or even if I do, it's going to like steal 30 minutes of my life. And it's just going to be pure misery. Like, I'll just nope out.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a huge amount to talk about here because it's just, you know, kind of something that happens. And in most war games, I would say the, you know, miniature war games, the difference between them or like the degree to which this exists is not so great that it would force me to just concede at the start, especially because of sort of the time investment in war games. And I mean, I think that that's just generally a pretty rare reaction. But yeah, in CCGs, like you said, it's far more common. Another category of effects that are sort of warping or that people generally, or I shouldn't say generally, many people identify as negative are, like copy effects where you're basically fighting against your own stuff, or take control effects, anything that kind of feels like, you know, stop hitting yourself. You know, many people, do not like those kinds of games. Mirror matches would be another sort of, item in this category. Colin, for you, do you find these kinds of effects to be NPEs? And if you do, like, what's your reaction to them when you encounter them?
I don't really consider them to be NPEs outside of, you know, things being overpowered, but I feel like that doesn't really apply here. For mirror matches, I guess it's like a soft NPE. I don't like playing into mirror matches because I like having a little bit in more inherent variety between like the two factions that are fighting. And I feel like it just makes the game more interesting. So it's not necessarily something that I'm going to be like, oh, this, you know, mirror matches are shitty and I'll never play one. It's just, I find more enjoyment playing with like more asymmetric armies or abilities.
Sure. No, I mean, I would agree with you on mirror matches. For me, I really don't like take control effects. I think when they're permanent, right? I don't mind obeys in Malifaux. Like, obeys are fine. But if there were effect to like steal a model, which I mean would be ludicrous in Malifaux, so you know, I don't really expect it. But in card games, these kinds of effects are pretty common, and I tend to not like them. I know in Game of Thrones, you know, my brother, he was a really strong Game of Thrones card game player, and he actually played one of the weaker houses, the Baratheons. But they, you know, even though they were generally considered one of the weaker houses, they had plenty of good cards and they had a whole take control mechanic. And it was just incredibly frustrating to, you know, like spend money on your own stuff and then have that stuff kill you. Like revenge mechanics can often feel like that too, right? Like in Game of Thrones specifically, the Martells had all these revenge mechanics. They were just way more efficient than even the initial attacks. So like you would attack and do some damage and then you would take twice as much back at half cost, right? And it was just like, this is not fun at all. And you know, what I think a lot of copy effects or take control effects or revenge mechanics have in common that people sort of find objectionable is they remove your ability to use your stuff, right? It's not like, you know, you charged a model and then there was like some fighting and then your model died. Yeah, your dead model is no longer usable. I get that. But it is like different when something is inaccessible to you because someone else took it from you. At least like psychologically for me, it feels different. And, you know, I think many other people would feel the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
All right, well, so the next category that we have here for, you know, potential NPEs or things that people often cite in NPEs are a lack of interactivity, right? So effects that are simply, you know, there's not interaction with your opponent. Sometimes that's because there's no counterplay, like we mentioned with Seamus, right? Seamus, he can teleport around and shoot people, and then he can teleport to safety. And that's frustrating because due to gameplay, there's often not as much interactivity, or there's, you know, not that really availability for counterplay. But it's also possible for the rules to not allow counterplay for whatever reason, right? Like the effects can just be structured in such a way that your opponent can't interact with them or interrupt them or whatever else. In a way, lack of interactivity, I think, is pretty obvious why many people would find that an MP, because, you know, you're sitting here trying to play a game with someone. And so that means, you know, you want to interact, you want to exert your pressure on them. And, you know, for a competitive experience, you want to also have to address what your opponent is trying to do, right? And so a lack of interactivity frustrates that. But it's also possible to get this situation through crew matchups, right? Like one crew is really fighting, the other doesn't want to fight at all. One crew is a bubble, the other plays really wide. Kogan, for you, how impactful is interactivity in like creating an NPE type environment for you?
I think it's really high. Like, if it feels like you can never respond to something, or you don't really have any, I guess, efficient or effective way of countering something, it just feels terrible. And, like, it feels less bad when it's more like a tech option or like a build list issue where it's something you can like fix, you know, remediate after the match, versus like an inherent built-in mechanic in the game where it's like, okay, once this starts, I know it's over. And I feel like for me, for most MPEs are, you know, just kind of like downstream of a lack of interactivity, because like it's really easy for me to check out of a game or just stop playing a game once I've like learned enough of the game to realize that it kind of enters a situation where like the first player to do this wins the game, and it just stops being interesting.
Right. I mean, I think one of the more impactful sort of lack of interactivity NPEs in Malifaux is activation control. Right. Mm. Because, you know, if you can generate activation control somehow, like, you know, through generating past tokens that it's not tied to the number of models that are on the board. Or, you know, if you're able to actively do something that eliminates someone's, you know, one of their unactivated models, and now you have this period of activity that they are not going to be able to respond to, that is creating an interactivity gap. Now, it is something that you did actively, right? It does kind of fold into player skill. Excuse me. But nonetheless, activation control is often cited as an element of frustration among Malifaux players. And it's one that I think is kind of difficult to solve. Malifaux has grappled with it its entire history. Past tokens, I think, are an improvement over the situation in 2, but I still hear, you know, everyone, I shouldn't say everyone, committed players understand the importance of activation control. Activation effects that influence activation control are frequently seen as highly negative and also very difficult to balance. In a game like Malifaux, or in any sort of game with activation tempo, I think it's almost inevitable that that sort of design space is going to be accessed, but it is one that I think many players do react to quite negatively.
Yes, I am one of them.
So the next, this kind of goes into the next topic I wanted to bring up, which is player skill, right? Skill differentials, unfortunately, can lead to NPE games, or, you know, games that one player found to be a negative experience. And, you know, we have talked about skill gap creating negative experiences before in the past. Most notably, you know, we had a whole episode about whether or not people really want skill-based games. So players or listeners who are interested in hearing this topic more fully would be encouraged to go to that episode and give it a listen. But Kogan, you know, briefly, how do you see skill gaps as influencing NPEs? And is there really anything that, you know, can be done about it?
I mean, it definitely has an effect. I think I think if you are the player with the higher skill, I think the best thing you can do is just kind of be as open with your information as possible. Again, like what I was saying earlier, I still would probably shrink back from giving advice unless directly asked, lest you accidentally put yourself in an even better mm-hmm. position. I think it's a hard thing to deal with, and I feel like sometimes it's an issue with like how the game is designed, or sometimes it's just kind of the objectives of the players not being aligned. You know, like I've said several times in the past, like if I realize that someone is going easy on me, it frustrates me way more than if they would just like end the game quickly or play to such a level where I can't really fight back, because at least in that case, I feel like I can learn the game better or kind of like understand like, all right, this is what is important in this game, or this is what I should be focusing on, as opposed to if they just put on the kid gloves, it's like, okay, now we're just kind of like running around in circles doing nothing and just, you know, wasting time, right? Like, I'm not really playing a game against you and you're not really playing a game against me at this point.
So, you know, one reading, right, like one way to read the play Antigone, which the ancient Greeks, you know, they did read it in this way, or this was one interpretation, is that uneven struggles are unhealthy for both sides. And, you know, because I don't know, I assume many of our listeners are familiar with the play, but basically, you know, Antigone is struggling against the state, and Creon, the ruler of Thebes, and, you know, they both end up ruined because of it. And there is, I think, something that sort of distinguishes this skill gap from some of the other NPE topics here, and that's that most of the other topics are subjective and they are singular. You know, I don't like playing against Seamus, so this game is going to suck. But my opponent is presumably playing Seamus because they do enjoy playing Seamus, right? And so, you know, this is not something that's going to be bad for both players. Whereas skill gaps often produce games that are just like not very interesting and not very satisfying. And in those cases, I think both players do often suffer. You know, both players are going to find this game to have been sort of negative. And you know, the big exception to that are seal clubbers, who are generally not, you know, not people most, you know, not the opponent most people want to play against. I know that I asked someone at the store to teach me how to play Age of Sigmar. And, you know, I was like explicit, you know, I don't know how to play Age of Sigmar. You know, can you teach me how to play? Because I know you play a lot. And, you know, the person was like, yeah, sure. You know, we'll play a learner game. And he just like seal clubbed the crap out of me. And there was like this one specific moment I remember so vividly, because he did something to me, which was like really impactful. And so then I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm going to do the exact same thing. And he's like, okay, I'm going to spend a command point to do this thing and, you know, negate it. And I was like, oh, wait, I like, isn't that something I could have done? He's like, yeah, you could have. And it was like, dude. And you know, I don't want to lay this at their feet. Maybe, you know, their expectations for what a learner game should be are, you know, different than mine. Maybe it was an intentional seal clubbing, although it definitely felt like that at the time, especially at that specific moment. But you know, player skill, it's very hard to bridge that gap, because it's difficult to be worse and it's virtually impossible for the other person to just suddenly be better. And you just kind of have to, you have to manage. And when you are onboarding newer players, which, you know, has been sort of the experience in our meta, or playing against casual players, right? Players who they'll maybe play a game and then they won't play another game for a couple of months. And then, you know, they'll want to play a game, and it's, you know, you become worried about not wanting to be a seal clubber, right? And so it can be difficult, I think, to manage that dynamic. All right. So the next we have up here is conceding slash ability to concede. Colgan, can you go into this a little bit? Because I've actually even already forgotten what it means.
For me, I guess it's the biggest thing. Like, I like games where they're, I guess in a sense, maybe not even win more mechanics, but if that some player is in a dominating position, that it'll shorten the overall length of the game, which I don't feel like Malifaux necessarily has because of how scoring is set where, you know, you can only score 1 point of your schemes for the first four turns, and you can only score the last point in the fifth turn. So even if someone is like far ahead, and I guess this is also coupled with skill gaps, if that player is far ahead and the other player doesn't really understand their position, and they just feel, you know, it can feel really, I guess, frustrating that, you know, the game is still going to take 3 hours, but because of how they positioned or how they set up, the game was actually over within like the first hour and a half. And then now you're just suffering through the last of it because either you don't want to concede and basically end the game prematurely because, you know, you can, even though you can't win, you might be able to catch up in points and you don't want to be seen as a bad sport. As opposed to like other games where it's like, okay, once they've taken this commanding lead, if you're not able to stop them in the next turn, like rather than going to turn five, it's going to end turn three.
Right. So, I mean, like little league sports often have mercy rules. You don't want to make kids sit there and have to watch while the better team just runs up the score endlessly. That is actually one reason why I don't like these kinds of effects, because I find it sort of offensive to have to be saved in that way. But, you know, I would agree that games that have sudden death or mercy rule type mechanics, or, you know, first past the post, right? Malifaux is not a first past the post type game. Those kinds of games, race games are, you know, usually that structured in that way, that does help resolve that situation. And yeah, I mean, I definitely understand the frustration of playing a Malifaux game, and knowing that you've lost turn one and just being like, well, it's all about diff now. Yeah, I mean, I get it. No one likes to feel like they have no future. I would say that I don't know that those really, I don't know if that improves the ability to concede necessarily, right? Like early ending mechanics are one thing. But I don't know, for instance, if it's an easier to concede, say, a War Machine game, which, as you've described to me, does have that mechanic, than it is for, like, to just outright concede a Malifaux game, right? So I'm not talking about a game in War Machine where someone has the early win condition. I mean, like, you've lost a model early, or, you know, something decisive has kind of happened, and you understand you cannot win this game. You might even be able to resist to where they could never make the early win condition, but you're going to lose, right? Like in that situation, is it easier to concede a game just because it has a theoretical first past the post mechanic? I mean, I really don't see it that way. What do you think?
I think it still does, but I also think in mercy games, it gets to the point where you don't really have to concede. Because basically, if you know you're that far behind, you know the game is going to end within like the next 20 or 30 minutes versus, you know, games that are like Malifaux where the point scoring is more spread out, where it's like, okay, I can, you know, you can struggle through the next 2 hours because you're not going to lose the game, but you're not so far behind that you can't do anything. But in a game where like the end is a lot easier to see, right? Like, oh, by like turn three, if they score these points, they're going to win. And at the bottom of turn, you know, at the bottom of turn two, it's kind of like a Malifaux, right? Like a lot of the games we played, they don't go to turn five, right? Because at the end of turn four, it's like, okay, well, we can kind of talk it out. But you can't really talk out a Malifaux game until it hits turn four, because like so much can happen up until turn four. Whereas in games like War Machine, where there's more of a clock or there's more of a pressure and like first past the post, like you can start talking about that a lot earlier into the game because it's so dependent. The scoring can be accelerated so quickly.
Well, I would say Malifaux the hidden information element of schemes does mean that, you know, this talk out element isn't going to be clear to both players necessarily, right? And it really is up to the player who can't catch up to initiate that conversation in many situations, because it's like, oh, well, maybe you had picked a scheme that depended on this model that died. So you know you cannot score this scheme, but your opponent doesn't know that, right? Mm. And so there's no way your opponent can maybe understand that you actually cannot win this game. And, you know, so that it's not a discussion that maybe both players have the same opportunity to initiate. Whereas in a game like War Machine, when the win conditions are clearly known by both players, it may be apparent to both players much earlier than it is in a Malifaux game.
Yeah, I think that is definitely also a contributing factor to this.
All right, so the last category we have is game length slash speed of play slash clocks. Okay, so game length can be an NPE just because a game goes longer than a player wants, right? And this can be down to an individual game, right? Like just that game I played went too long. Or it can be this game as a title takes too long, so I'm just not going to play it. Kogan, what is your position on game length specifically as an NPE?
Game length as like intended game length.
Right? I mean, I guess both.
So I guess for me, it kind of like sits into expectations, right? If I know I'm sitting down for this game and it should take about 2 hours and it takes about 2 hours, like, I don't think that's necessarily an NPE, though. In general, I find that games that take a long, I think there was a study on this that I've mentioned a couple of times, but basically games that are like over half an hour, they start getting like a lot more mentally taxing, or you become way more emotionally invested in like the outcome versus shorter games, and can result in like more negative effects. But like a game length that is extended because someone is playing very slowly irritates me to no end. Like, it's supposed to be a 10-minute game and it takes half an hour because of people playing slow. Like, that's going to bother me way more than like a game taking an hour on average.
Well, okay, so what about a situation where, you know a Malifaux game is going to be like 2.5 or 3 hours, and let's just say like round 2.5, a slower Malifaux game against an experienced player is going to be like 3 hours. But you know against a newer player, you know, you're probably looking at 3.5 hours. Is that something that you find in NPE? Because, I mean, and, you know, feel free to be honest here, right? I have heard people say in the past things like, I don't really want to play against new people, right? Or, I'm not identifying any specific game here, but this is just something I have heard described. So, I mean, yeah, what do you think about, you know, sort of situations where you expect the game to go longer than the ordinary play experience is going to?
Yeah, so personally, it's not an NPE for me. Again, it just depends what I enter with expectations-wise. Like, yeah, there might be times where it's like, yeah, I don't want to play a new player because I'm not going to have the time for it, right? Like, I only have, like, 2 hours to play a game, and I know from past experience, like, playing with a new player is going to take at least, like, minimum 3 or 4 hours that I might refuse. Or in most cases, I'd probably just let them know that, you know, like, I have a hard out at this time, so, you know, we're just going to have to stop the game halfway because it's probably not going to finish. But as long as, like, that expectation is set, versus, you know, if, like, because when we play games, it's usually 2 hours. We play two games, it's 2 hours, and because you're being a dick and you're on your phone and it goes over to, like, 4 hours, like, that's just going to be a shitty experience for me. I just feel like, this is bullshit.
So, actually, that flows into speed of play, right? And you know, that and the dreaded time warpers who make speed of play just drag on forever. And you know, I think I can predict your answer here fairly confidently. But when the speed of play falls below your expectation, do you find this to be an NPE?
Yes, I definitely.
What can you do about it? Right, like, so for instance, you know, you're gonna play Malifaux. You're and you play against someone that you've not played before. You have no reason to believe that they're new. It's just they're someone that you haven't played before. And in fact, they are that person, right? They're on their phone. They're talking to their friend who's, you know, watching the game, or, you know, quote unquote watching, or, you know, hanging out or whatever. And so they're not ready when it's on their turn. They weren't paying attention when it was your activation. So they have to ask you a bunch of questions, or, you know, you guys have to roll things back because they didn't know that you had boring conversation up, and not because they forgot, right? Everyone forgets stuff, but just because they weren't paying any attention. Like, when you're in this situation, what do you do? Like, do you start making kind of like passive aggressive sighs? Do you start taking a lot of time yourself? Do you just like try to lose to get out? Do you just concede? What is your sort of typical response to this experience?
I would say, like, normally I don't think I make passive aggressive marks. I generally would just like play faster and looser and with less investment in the game. Like, and, you know, if, again, like, if it goes over, like, the time I went to a lot, I'll probably just, like, oh, you know, like, I gotta go, you know, like, I have to leave, or I gotta do something else, or I promise someone else something, and I'm just, you know, I have to, like, clock out, we can call it your win or whatever, and I'll just kind of, like, write it off. I mean, it depends. Like you were saying, if they exhibit a lot of negative behaviors, like, it seems like they're intentionally cheating on rules, or they're trying to play off like they didn't know something would happen, or it's like I have to explain the same rule to them like every single time it happens because they want to try and catch me off guard. Like, that's going to change it a lot more, rather than someone just being like, you know, kind of new to the game and not really understanding what's going on. Because I feel like in those cases, if I really feel like, you know, they don't have a strong grasp of the rules, or they don't, you know, it's clear that there's a huge difference in skill level, I'll try and like push it more towards a learning game where I'm just like talking through, it's like, oh, if you go here, you know, like I could do this or I could do that, rather than like trying to play a normal game.
I find personally, right, as a personal pet peeve, when people are not attentive to the game and the game like slows down because of it, I personally find it really frustrating, right? Like, you know, you weren't paying attention. You didn't know what I did on my turn. So now your turn's a lot longer because we have to go through the entire sequence of what I did, right? Or, you know, not so much in Malifaux, but say multiplayer board games. Many of them have a reputation for being long, like Twilight Imperium. Yeah, Twilight Imperium is going to be a long time investment period, but it's longer when people who, when it's, you know, when it's not their turn, they're not planning their movement. They're, you know, on their phones or watching, you know, TV or whatever, right? And I mean, I find that just kind of inconsiderate to the experience. Now, I tend to react to it internally. I just think really bad things about them. And, you know, we've kind of talked in the past sort of briefly, either, you know, during pre-shows or every once in a while, I think, on the show, that having sort of an Asian background makes it, you know, like, this is a very typical Asian response, right? You just, you sit there, you say, oh, no, that's okay, take your time. And then you just think about how ill-bred they are and, like, how stunning it is that these genes have managed to persist through the ages. yes. clocks, right? So clocks, are a possible solution to speed of play type issues, or, you know, overall game length type issues, or, you know, kind of both in theory. Some people find clocks themselves, right? The use of clocks to be an NPE. And many, many, many more people find that to be true before they use them. Like, in my experience, actually, once clocks are adopted, most people acclimate, which, okay, that is true. Even when someone opposes things, people learn to deal with them. But I also find that many people who were initially opposed or concerned about the impact clocks are going to have end up finding them to be positive. Hogan, for you, what's your position on clocks? And, you know, what is your experience for how people have, you know, like, related to them?
I think it's largely the same as you. I think most people that end up using clocks start to appreciate them and, you know, enjoy playing with them. Like, personally, I like it a lot as well. In my mind, the first time I started using clocks to, you know, like, for tournament games and stuff like that, my assumption was that I was just going to clock out all the time. But I don't think I've ever, like, hit the death clock timer for a game. And It's kind of nice because it also relieves like the individual pressure I have on my turns. Like instead of the pressure of making like the perfect decision, it becomes more a pressure of not burning my time over something that doesn't matter that much. So it's been nice, and it helps keep the game at a pace. So like, you know, I played a few games of Blood Bowl, and I feel like a lot of people, I guess, a lot of people never want to play Blood Bowl on the clock because they feel like it turns it into like an even sweatier experience than it is. But I feel like Blood Bowl is a little unique in that sense, because most people come in with the idea that it's, you know, super fun, goofy fantasy football, when it, you know, once you've learned the mechanics of the game, it is, you know, very inherently a risk management game. So if you're trying to do the fun loony stuff, you can easily find yourself very far behind in the game.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about Blood Bowl in the past. I really do enjoy it, and it is not the game it seems to be. Although when you play against opponents who just sort of play recklessly like that, and you see them succeeding in all their roles, where like your beautiful plan is failing because you can't roll a 2+, but that's kind of another thing. It's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, one of the things that you've appreciated about clocks is the sense of freedom it gives you, right? You don't feel constrained by it. In fact, you feel free to take the time when you need it, and then otherwise it helps you move along. And it makes me think, like, for me, at restaurants, I'm incredibly indecisive, and I make my choice because I feel the server's like disapproval for how long I'm taking. So then I just make a snap decision. Whereas like if the server had a stopwatch and they just pressed it instantly, you know, when they asked me what I want and I had like my 30 seconds to figure it out, that would be a freeing experience for me. So yeah, I mean, I can definitely see what you mean by that. So I did say that was the last category, but it made me, you know, our discussion here made me sort of realize there is one more section that we haven't addressed specifically, although we have kind of mentioned it in reference, and that is jerks, right? Like, you know, now again, nobody thinks they're a jerk, right? Nobody is like Richard III here saying, I'm going to play the villain. Everyone thinks that they're, you know, doing okay, right? So to a certain extent, this is kind of subjective, but there are various behaviors that are, you know, like negative, right? Like in economic terms, maybe like rent seeking, right? Where you're trying to get an illegitimate advantage. So like cheating is a great example, or just like being so sloppy to where it's not cheating because it doesn't have that intentionality, but it's impossible to actually respect the rules of the game because everything is being done in such a slipshod manner, right? I mean, many of those people are actually just really nice people, so I wouldn't say that they're jerks, but that can also be an NPE if you're sitting here trying to play a game. But you know, like seal clubbers, that's often a behavior that people would ascribe to jerks. Some people find neckbeard tryharding to be jerkish behavior. I do not, because I don't think casual is inherently superior to competitive. I just think it's a misalignment of expectations. But certainly seal clubbing, you know, or like telling someone, hey, yeah, casual is great, and then showing up with something you know is not casual, right? Like that's what I would consider jerkish behavior. Any kind of like tit for tat sort of behavior, I would say is pretty jerkish, right? Someone's doing something that you find annoying, so you respond in order to annoy them, right? Like, you know, that I think is often not exactly positive. Fortunately, most of the stuff is pretty rare. It is out there, right? You know, many people have horror stories about like the terrible person they played with or, you know, heard about or whatever. But for the most part, this is fairly rare. But, you know, Colgan, what is your thought on like this kind of jerk category?
Like you said, I think it is very rare. And I think the more common thing that I come up with against is like your example where other people feel someone's playstyle is an NPE, but I personally won't. So, like, I've had games where I played with someone and I had no issue with how the game was played. And afterwards, you know, like, some of the people I knew would come up to me. It's like, oh, man, that must have been terrible for you. I was like, wait, why? It's like, oh, because, you know, like, they're a neckbeard tryhard. I'm like, oh, they didn't do anything wrong. It's like, the game was fine. Like, I have no issues with this. Like, and it's, I feel like a lot of those, well, I'm, like, wondering now, like, how many of those cases of, you know, the people being, you know, like, those jerks or those assholes is really just a misalignment of objectives or values of the game. But, you know, there definitely are cases where, you know, I can't think of any that happened to me in recent memory, but in those cases where it does come up, I generally just, like, mentally check out of the game. So, like, I guess it's also, like, similar when I feel like when the speed of play is, like, way too slow, my play just speeds up and becomes, like, more aggressive. So it's, like, for every extra minute they take, I'll take, like, a minute less. And I'm like, I just want this game to be over as fast as possible.
So I have something which I think some people consider, like, a hot take or sort of unreasonable. I think taking no responsibility for preparation is kind of jerkish. Like, I understand, like, new players need to learn the game. I get it. But if you've been playing for a while and you've taken no responsibility to try to learn the rules, like, in my opinion, like, that's kind of jerkish. And if it results in sort of a longer game or, like, a clunkier game or just a negative, like, a reduced game experience in general because of, you know, one player's lack of preparation or familiarity with the game, again, after a point in time to where they really should understand the game at that point or made some sort of, like, effort to understand it. Yeah, I mean, I find that, like, kind of rude. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I guess it depends on, like, the degree of it. I think, like, personally, I don't like playing games if I'm not able to recall most of the rules from memory. So, like, I guess we both have a bit of a reputation, of, like, knowing the rules to, like, a very, like, pretty, a deep level of knowledge about the rules of most of the games we play. And personally, the reason for that is I hate looking up rules during a game because I feel like it slows it down so much. And, you know, like, every, like, second I spend, like, flipping through a rule book to try and find, like, a specific passage, it just, like, takes me out of the game, and I feel like it's just ruining the game. It ruins the game experience for me personally. So I like to do that as little as possible, and if it takes me, like, more than a minute to find a rule, I'll just resolve it in the way that's most favorable to my opponent, make a note of it, and just move on.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think maybe this goes to the Asian like experience again, right? Because Asian cultures are often described as shame-based cultures, right? And so for me, I want to know the rules really well so that I am not a drag on the game, right? Like, I do not want that responsibility. I don't want to inconvenience my opponents or, you know, other people who might need the table space after we're done, or, you know, like, just whatever it is, I feel an obligation to meet a certain level of preparedness, which, I mean, that level is a sliding scale, right? When I'm brand new or I'm not super invested in a game, it's going to be a lot lower, right? If I'm playing a game more for a favor for other people, you know, my own internal expectations are not as, you know, not as high for myself. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to be the reason why the game isn't going forward. And that's my primary motivation to understand the rules. I do have, like, this little part too where, I mean, I think everyone has it in them, right? Because oftentimes you'll be in a rules discussion with someone oftentimes when you are in a rules discussion with someone and you've got the rule and you, like, read it verbatim out loud, they have to, like, take the book and read it for themselves, even though you just read it verbatim. Right. And because part of it is, I get it. You shouldn't necessarily have the greatest faith that your opponent actually has all this down to the extent that they, you know, should or even seem that they do. And so, you know, reading it for myself doing that preparation for myself is a way, I guess, to maybe not have to rely on the faulty nature of potential opponents.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question, I guess, in that vein. For like any game where you need to like create an army list, do you always have army lists prepared beforehand? So like for games, I guess like army scale or stuff like that, if I don't have an army list prepared and someone asks me for a game, I just don't want to play. But I know plenty of people who will just like whip up an army list on the spot. And that's like, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to like delay this game so I can write up a list. Like, I'm either ready to play this game or I'm not playing it today.
If someone asks me for a game and I don't have a list, I don't have a problem with the time it takes for that list creation process itself. Now, I should caveat that where if I have to make a list on the fly, where I'm not going to try like a whole bunch of new stuff, because, you know, then I it would just take me too long to, you know, to do that reading. So I would say for most army games that I play, even if I don't have a physical list, like I have a list, kind of position. I would generally feel that if I were not specifically scheduled to do something and someone invited me to do, you know, to do it anyways, I do not want to take an excessive amount of time in preparation, but I feel comfortable in their understanding that this preparation element is part of the game experience.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, if I have like a list in mind, like I'll still play, but if I have like nothing in mind as a list, then I just, I'm like, I'll just skip. Like, you can,
well, I mean, because for a lot of these, right, like, you know, an army scale game, like let's say 40K, right? You can't, what you, you know, even what you have narrows those options. And so it's mostly, I guess, in situations where, you know, someone asks you if you want to play and you don't have any stuff, right? So you're going to play the other side of, you know, what they have or something like that. You know, again, in that situation, it would be so clear to my opponent that I was not prepared beforehand that I wouldn't feel in any sense any great obligation to be prepared at that second.
Okay.
So for you, Colgan, you know, some people are more motivated to avoid NPEs than they are to find, you know, above expectation positive experiences, right? They are more risk averse than they are gain averse, if we, you know, talk about a spectrum of negative and positive experience. For you personally, where do you sit?
I'm definitely more risk adverse. I would rather avoid NPEs than create like an extraordinary experience at the risk of turning the entire
thing. Right. I think most people are. Are there any behaviors that you have that are, I mean, maybe not consciously, but possibly consciously, but that ultimately do sort of help reduce the potential for you to experience NPEs or, you know, to fall into the experiences that you find negative?
I think knowing the rules and being able to like pull up the relevant text when asked or just to offer it, I think helps avoid a lot of that. And I think in general, because I have the reputation of knowing the rules, people are more likely to understand that. Well, I guess like the biggest thing I do is if I know a rule that will benefit my opponent, I'll let them know. So it's like if I know like how their army plays, or I know there's a certain interaction that they're not taking advantage of and there's no reason not to do it. So I guess like in terms of Malifaux, if like someone's cheating and, you know, it's like they're down by -5 and then they cheat, so it's like, oh, you're only -1, but it doesn't actually change my damage flip. You know, I'll be like, do you really want to cheat that? Because it's not going to change anything. Right. So I'll let them know that. So when I'm able to do that, I think that also helps avoid NPEs, and I think it also earns me a bit of, like, I guess, benefit of the doubt if I do make a mistake. So it shows, you know, it's like, I don't want to take advantage of certain things if I'm also watching my opponents, if I'm watching my opponents play for things they're doing incorrectly, as well as things that they could be doing more
effectively. I mean, it also helps soften your, like, try hard netlist reputation.
I'm not sure if I'm ever getting out of that.
How so many, many people manage NPEs by narrowing the circle with which they're willing to play. I personally, I feel like gaming is meant for misfits, and I am, you know, again, I'm 43. The newest generation of gamers are a generation removed from me, right? I still remember when gaming was meant for misfits, or, you know, those were the only people really that were playing. They were weirdos. And, you know, if you were there, you were also weird in your way too. But I guess what I'm saying is I try very hard to not have narrowing my circle or excluding opponents, even those I don't find super fun, to be my answer to NPEs. For you, you know, how important, or like how frequently do you use that that option, and what do you think about it generally?
You mean in terms of playing people that I wouldn't necessarily
avoid NPEs by only playing with a small circle of people who they, you know really well, mm-hmm. and who, you know, are going to give them a game that they know they're going to enjoy. And, you know, we can call them cliques or whatever. Every game store has them. I mean, every community of any kind has them, right? People of similar dispositions or similar, you know, who like each other, cluster together frequently. And that is very natural. There's nothing sinister about it. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I do not like to address the potential of NPEs by trying to avoid people who play the game in ways that I personally, you know, find less enjoyable, because I do not want, for my own reasons, I don't want that to be an answer that I use. And I guess what I'm asking is, like, is this something that you do? Do you actively, or I mean, everyone does curate to a certain extent, right? Like if someone shows up with a, you know, in an SS uniform or something, I'm not going to play that guy, right? Like, I mean, or that person, but, you know, let's face it, that guy. For you, so you know, for anyone, there is limits. But for you, how I guess, how heavily do you curate your opponent circle, and what do you think of that as a method to manage NPEs? Like, what's your opinion of it generally as a practice?
Okay. Yeah, I don't really curate the people I'll play against that much. If someone wants to play a game that I play, I'm down to play. But I think to couple with that, I'm also a lot less, or I guess I think I'm able to handle a wider variety of opponents just because I spend so much time like reading the rules and understanding the mechanics of games that I do play. So I think I'm a lot better equipped to push back against people that might be trying to abuse the system, or against people that aren't necessarily trying to abuse the system, but just don't really understand how certain things work within the game itself. As far as people limiting their circle to only people they know they enjoy to play with, I don't really have a problem with that. You know, this is your free time. Like, you should choose to spend it with people you want to spend it with, right? You don't have any obligation to have to spend your free time with people you find deplorable or you don't enjoy spending time with, right? It's like, okay, I have 10 hours of free time this week. I have to dedicate like 2 hours of those to these people I hate just to be a good person. Like, that sounds,
you know, miserable. I'm on board with you that it's perfectly legitimate to curate your opponents. I just, that is not a step I want to take. You know, I find many people who end up being excluded on those bases are often kind of like, you know, like the social rejects of the community. And I just kind of find that treatment sort of regrettable, or, I mean, even you might go so far as to say unfair in some cases, which I think, you know, I meant to actually end two topics ago, but I just keep thinking up, you know, I guess this is something near and dear to my heart. you as the NPE, right? Like, not you, Colgan, but I mean one as the NPE. How do you address that situation, right? Like, maybe you hear through the grapevine that someone didn't really enjoy playing because of a specific thing, right? Like, they thought you were too competitive or, you know, whatever. Or, sure, like, even if it's not a specific incident, right? Like, you don't hear someone specifically saying, oh, yeah, Joe hated playing against Colgan, which Joe is just a name pulled out of, you know, I don't know someone named Joe at the store, which is kind of surprising, but I just pulled that name, you know, like randomly, right? but, you know, in situations where you have a reason to believe that you might be the NPE, right, like from someone else's perspective,
sure,
how does that impact you, or do you do anything, do you do anything different? Like, how do you address that?
Yeah, I think that's a tough question. Like, personally, I will think about what the criticism is and how valid I think it is, and I'll kind of move from there whether or not it's a behavior I actually want to change. So I know, like, earlier you joked about, like, me having the reputation as being a netlister, and I know, like, some people will say that, but personally, I don't really care if that's how people perceive me, because I don't really care if other people netlist. I remember, I forget who it was, but I think it was like a quote from like some like deck brewer for like Magic the Gathering. And he was saying, if 99% of your deck isn't netlisted, you're an idiot. And if 1% of it isn't like your own custom thing, then it has no soul. So like the idea is that, you know, you netlist for games that, you know, you want to play at a high level because you're never going to, like, outthink the entirety of the player base, right? Like, you as an individual aren't going to have, like, some magical epiphany that none of the other, like, thousands of players has never ever thought of before, right? So I don't really take that as an insult, and I don't really see an issue with it.
What about competitiveness in general? So, for instance, right, like, you would probably, like, on a spectrum, you might be more competitive or results oriented, or at least maybe not results, but like optimal play oriented, right? Like you have a goal to perform well, which isn't necessarily connected to winning or losing, right? It's about trying to play to a higher level. But you very well may play games with people who just want to throw models on the table. When you understand that situation and you know your preferred way of playing is like a potentially NPE, do you alter the way you play the game? An NPE for them?
Not really, no. I mean, you know, I have the way I want to play the game. I think, you know, if there's a big skill gap, I've become like, I know in the past I said, like, I guess I'll try and take it a little easier now, though I'm not always necessarily successful because, again, like, I don't really like it when people take it easy on me either. Because I feel like in that instance, you know, like we're always saying, there's a difference between, like, the main reason that people have, like, a negative image of people that play competitively has nothing to do with the actual play style and more with the conception of them being, like, rules lawyery in an underhanded way, right? Like they'll do a bunch of gotchas, they'll do all these weird little things, they'll abuse rules beyond their meaning for their own advantage, which, you know, I think is more of the issue rather than, you know, wanting to play strong lists. Because yeah, it's like a while back, I remember people were complaining about this one player. It's like, oh yeah, he only wants to play strong stuff. And I was like, okay, wait, what's the issue with that? It's like, does he do anything wrong? It's like, no, he never fudges the rules to his advantage. He's not mean or rude. You know, he's not like condescending or anything. It's just like when he plays the game, he plays strong stuff. And I'm just like, I was like struggling to understand what the issue with that was.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there. So, you know, NPE, I think it's a complicated topic. It's definitely a subjective one, and it's not always easy to talk about. Have you ever tried to address the subject of someone's behavior with them in the context of gaming?
I think if I'm close to them, I will. If we have like a fairly like friendly relationship, I'll try and broach that. But for, you know, like people I like see or play to, if I play like a one-off game with them and it's really negative, I usually won't bother unless, yeah, unless we have a lot of engagement outside of that particular game, I generally
right.
Won't
yeah,
bother.
I mean, I think that that's true, and I think for many people, you know, especially when you're in a negative experience, just like get through it and then don't ever deal with this asshole again. I do think many things that seem negative are, you know, accidental or miscommunications. I know I was listening, you know, this was years ago. I don't remember if it was Third Floor Wars or on Swamp Fiends, although I do think it was on Third Floor Wars. Cody was talking about how he was at you know, some big tournament and they were playing for the title, and he, like, you know, he thought his opponent was an ass, and his opponent also thought he was an ass, and they had like this timeout, and Cody was like, dude, what's wrong with you? And the other guy was like, hey, what's wrong with you? And they talked it out, and it was like, oh, okay, well, cool, let's have some fun. And, you know, then they did have some fun. And, you know, I do think most people are just not really interested in investing the effort for that. Many people also are quite conflict averse. And so, you know, that even if they knew they could be successful or believe they could be successful in an approach like that, it's just, you know, it's not worth it, and they're not comfortable doing it. And I have very rarely had cause to do it as well. And typically it's in the context of like a campaign or something where, you know, you sort of have to resolve someone who you're going to be dealing with, right? So it's not like a one-off game or something mm-hmm. like that. But it's never fun, and it's never comfortable. And also it's really hard to change people's perspectives. And once someone's kind of labeled NPE, or like, you know, not fun or whatever, it's really difficult for anyone to, adjust that perception. Like, you know, I know for myself, I, at the store, like I am goal oriented, right? I show up to play something that I've scheduled to play. And then when I'm done, I'm gone. You know, I don't spend a ton of time hanging out. I'm not actually really comfortable or interested so much in the, like the social aspect of games. It's more the, like the play experience that actually interests me, in games for the most part. And so that can, you know, come across, in, you know, as like rude or standoffish sometimes. And once you've given someone that impression, it is very difficult to address, especially if you're unaware of it. You know, fortunately I've been a jerk for, you know, 4 decades now. So like, I'm kind of familiar with some of the ways it manifests. But, you know, I do want to close this like section of you as the NPE by saying, hey, look, there's hope out there for everyone, right? Like, you can find other jerks, you know, jerks alike to play with. You can work on yourself, right? Or, you know, try to make amends. You can make efforts to reach out, to be more positive. You can also make efforts to alter the way in which you play to match those, of, you know, where you see other people who you'd like to participate with. So, you know, for instance, if you're naturally a more competitive player and everyone else is playing narrative fluffy lists, I mean, you know, you can consider trying to more closely meet those expectations. So, you know, I do think that NPEs, like whether, you know, it's on one side or the other, most are accidental, most are resolvable, and probably all of us have been an NPE to someone else at some point, which I think really, you know, means that none of us are blameless, and also none of us should feel, you know, absolutely terrible about this.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think when you're talking about the one thing I think I do to, I guess, like prevent NPE, or I guess when we're talking about, you know, like limiting the circle of people you play with, one thing I actively do is even if someone has like a fairly negative reputation, even if it's reinforced by people that like I spend a lot of time with or who I'm closer with, I will always try to play them and like make sure I develop my own opinion. Because like I said, there's been a lot of cases where, you know, like or there's in cases where, like, after a game, people come up to me and it's like, oh man, like, they're, you know, like, your opponent was really this or that. I'm like, yeah, I didn't, you know, like, I didn't even have that thought at all during the game. And it's just like, people's perceptions can be wildly different. So I always try and make sure that, you know, I have some firsthand experience rather than just like buying into whatever the general rumors are about a person.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, right? Like, give people a chance is probably, you know, a good gaming lesson and a good life lesson. But, you know, don't want to get too grandiose about it. So when you come to the other coast, you know, you have some fun and you learn something, right? So, you know, the more you know. We can't do GIFs on the radio, right? But you could just imagine the I think it's NBC, right? The little star going by. All right. So, I mean, we talked about this for kind of a while, longer than I thought we would actually go. Do you have any concluding thoughts about MPs or anything else?
No, I think I.
All right, great. End episode spiel here. Thank you, all of our backers. Thank you, all of our listeners. Thank you, everyone who found me an NPE and didn't punch me in the parking lot. And talk to everyone next time.
Night, everyone.